In 1964, the United States and the Soviet Union were locked in a blind and deadly struggle, the Cold War. Only Canada's Prime Minister Lester Pearson, Nobel Peace Prize laureate, tried to break the mounting tension. His right-hand man was John Watkins. Alliance Atlantis presents an Alberta Filmworks and Gala Film Productions film. Christopher Plummer in Agent of Influence, with narrative description by Audiovision Canada, inspired by a true story. September 1964, north of Moscow, USSR. A horse clomps through fallen leaves. Starring Marina Orsini. A young peasant boy rides the horse. Ted Whitall, Sean Johnson. A chauffeur straightens a Canadian flag on the hood of a car. Curtis Sanheim, Alain Golem. A distinguished white-haired gentleman, John Watkins, kisses a peasant woman on both cheeks. He shakes a man's hand as he says goodbye to a family. John's colleague, Gregory Aloysia, hugs a young boy. Costume designer, Elizabeth McGovern. Editor, Denis Papillon. Production designer, John Blackie. As the two men walk to the car, the woman and her children wave goodbye. Director of photography, Alan Smith. Music by Jean-Marie Benoit. Story editor, Ken Chubb. They drive away.
You see, that's the place where I'm going to retire. Enjoying life with my wife and kids. And you, where will you escape to?
Aloysia turns to John, who gazes out the window.
There's a small square in Paris, a little cafe table that gets the morning sun. That's where you'll find me.
Translating poetry.
Yes, possibly. My retirement is still a long way off.
They drive past men collecting wood in the forest.
A mother's dream for an ambassador.
Shaped by a modest Canadian pension, my friend.
John. Soviet people think you deserve more than a small cafe table in Paris.
Aloysia, what's this? You want to turn me into a spy?
Hear me out, John.
I can see the headlines now. Canadian ambassador retires to Paris on Moscow gold.
We want to help you. We know certain things.
Who's we? Your colleagues at the university? Or the KGB?
The Americans are aware of your indiscretions in this country.
Indiscretions.
The car stops, blocked by a gypsy convoy.
What
are those gypsies doing? Asks Aloysia.
I think I'll stretch my legs.
John gets out of the car. Don't let them block the road, says Aloysia.
That's
enough. John tosses a gypsy a pack of cigarettes. Aloysia fires a gun into the air. Stay away from the ambassador, he yells. A gypsy draws his own gun. Please, friends, he's harmless, John says to the gypsies. Can't count his balls and get the same answer twice. The gypsy puts his gun away.
What are you telling them?
He only uses his head to keep the rain out of his neck. A gypsy woman laughs. The Russian was napping in the nut pile when God was creating nuts. The best part of him ran down his mother's leg, another man says, then spits. May his Russian head swell and his Moscow dick shrink, says another. Aloysia gets back into the car, and the gypsies move off the road. Putting his gun in his briefcase, Aloysia straightens a pile of black and white photos. John gets back in the car.
What the hell was your plan? To shoot every man, woman, and child?
These gypsies are no good Soviets. Where did you learn Romani?
Why does a history professor carry a gun?
You know, there is a story. I've always wanted to tell you, my dear ambassador. It's about Canadian wilderness. You know that nature demands a constant balance between the predator and prey.
The car speeds along the road. A snow-capped mountain range is backed by a brilliant blue sky in Kananaskis, Alberta, Canada. Holding an urn, a man in a cowboy hat helps a woman up a hill. They stand at the edge of a rocky cliff overlooking a river.
You brought Dad through here in a kayak?
I know you blame me.
It was a heart attack.
He drowned.
His blood pressure was sky high.
Oh, Murray, Dad was healthy. I never saw him take any medication.
He decided not to.
How do you know?
Snooped through his journal.
Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't know about the trip.
Before, Murray.
I was ashamed. Spying on my own dad. The job's deformed me.
Murray removes the lid from the urn and grabs a handful of ash. He throws it into the breeze.
You wanted to die.
The woman, Diane Fletcher, takes the urn. She smashes it on the rocks.
You should have told me.
She leaves. A man in a suit looks over a railing in the foyer of a huge stone building. The Kremlin, Moscow, USSR. John climbs the imposing staircase. Pauses for a breath before reaching the top.
Ça va?
Oh, oui, ça va.
The man in the suit takes John's hat and coat and hands them to a soldier, then gives John an envelope. Arrived this morning in the diplomatic pouch, sir, he says.
Gromyko knows about the Times article.
Thank you, Mario, John replies. I can always count on you. John and Mario approach two men at a reception. Good morning, Minister Gromyko, John says.
Ambassador Bond.
Gromyko reads a newspaper.
Russians not to be trusted, so says Lester Pearson. Canada's usually more pro-Soviet prime minister. How is the Soviet Union to do business with a man who today shakes my hand and tomorrow stabs me in back?
The journalist who wrote that article, Minister, worked for the U.S. State Department.
Paul Fields.
Exactly. My staff checked the story out, and Mr. Pearson has never been interviewed by that reporter.
Oh, so, Ambassador Boland, this is your free press, a vehicle for CIA, huh?
Minister, the Times is the world's most prestigious daily.
But according to Ambassador Watkins, it employs men who are paid to lie.
You hardly expect me to stay silent, Charles, when you use the American press to malign my prime minister.
Malign? Aren't we being a little paranoid, Ambassador? Gentlemen?
Bowen leaves.
So now you're in trouble with Americans. But never mind. You will always have friends in Soviet Union.
Well, friendship is a gift, Minister. That's why my first loyalty is to my oldest friend, Lester Pearson. God knows I never had the desire to be a diplomat. I only became one because of him.
In politics, Ambassador, one day a friend, next problem. You know Russian joke?
Remove the person and you have removed the problem. Minister, John replies, in Canada, even we bureaucrats are still guaranteed a fair hearing. They are served drinks.
Here's to Canadian fairness.
They drink.
Ah.
What a day, John says to Mario as they leave the Kremlin, and it's only noon.
Oh, what
a... Damn, I forgot my glasses. No, Mario, read this to me. Mario opens the envelope.
Well, it's a personal note from the Prime Minister. Dear John, a note to remind you of your promise to dine with Marion and I next week in Montreal. Please phone me as soon as you recover from your flight home. Best wishes, Mike.
A man lights a cigarette at CIA headquarters, Langley, Virginia, USA.
You're asking me to arrest my own ambassador.
Moscow was the last straw. Son of a bitch actually told Gromyko that Fields was CIA.
Mr. Angleton, I'm sure Gromyko knows that Fields...
Then we've got your beloved prime minister, the goddamn Nobel laureate Peacenik, whining about our nuclear weapons program, telling anyone who'll listen that Vietnam is not worth one American life. That foreign bastard commie sympathizer gets to decide the price of an American life. We got him elected, or we made Pearson. First, this pinko has got to go. KGB written all over his face.
Angleton tosses him a photo of John.
Some gossip.
As another man steps in.
At a Moscow reception.
David, meet Robert Madison, my go-to man in special operations. This is David Present, director of the RCMP's KGB desk.
David shakes hands with Madison.
Explain to our Canadian guest why he will arrest Ambassador Watkins.
You recognize these two men?
No.
KGB defectors. Initial interrogation of this one, Golitsyn, confirms that Watkins for several years has been known inside the KGB as an agent of influence.
What could possibly be his motive?
Well, Golitsyn says that Watkins is being blackmailed.
I've checked him out. So have the Brits.
The Brits? Think I'm going to trust any Secret Service that produces faggot traitors like Burgess, McLean, and Philby?
Philby is a ladies' man, sir. You should know. After all, he was your best friend before he went over to the KGB.
I've got two KGB defectors telling me Watkins is suspect. Now you pick him up and interrogate the son of a bitch.
I'll have to do it my
way. Just get your polite Canadian ass back to Ottawa and remind your boss Hayden of the agreement he has with the CIA. The RCMP must act on any evidence that reveals a security threat against either country.
I'll need some time.
I know you can make it happen. We've invested so much faith in you, David.
David heads for the door. Madison closes it behind him. Later.
So what are we waiting for, David?
RCMP intelligence.
The CIA to finish squeezing two KGB defectors.
Ottawa, Canada.
What do you think, Inspector Fletcher?
We know the CIA evidence is coming. Let's go and get Ambassador Watkins now.
I think that's the last thing we should do.
Sir, with all due respect, at any moment, Watkins could return to Paris. 3 hours later, he's sipping borscht with Khrushchev. We lose him forever.
He's waiting to see the Prime Minister, his closest friend and mentor. He's not going anywhere.
Well, fine, but while we wait for the CIA, we arrest him and interrogate him about the leaks.
Intelligence work is not about kicking down doors and arresting people. It's about setting the trap.
The CIA says he works for the KGB. He might have a name, might even be in contact.
Even if a mole exists inside B operations, the KGB would never tell Ambassador Watkins who it was.
We need to do something different. 15 years, we haven't caught one spy.
Well, there was Morrison, Levy.
All walk-ins, David. Low-level Soviet rejects who turned themselves in before we even knew they existed.
Sir, if we have even a suspicion of a mole, waiting could be fatal. Watkins might be tipped off. We move now, pick up the ambassador, and wait for the CIA documentation.
No, we keep him under surveillance.
The CIA wants us to.
I'll be damned if I let the CIA bully us into arresting our own ambassador without any evidence.
Well, your way, David, and we lose him forever.
Sir, do you want to risk another Herbert Norman suicide? Oh. I'm sure no one here wants an ambassador's corpse on their record.
Okay, David, we'll wait for the CIA evidence. Diane? You keep your eye on the ambassador.
I think that's the right way to go, sir.
But if and when we pick Watkins up, I want Inspector Fletcher to lead the interrogation.
Fine with me.
It's all for now. The inspector and I need to talk.
David leaves Diane with Hayden.
You won't regret this, sir. But do I report to President?
President has a right to be there, but this time you report directly to me. And we'll see.
Meaning?
We need new blood at the top. This is your chance, Diane. Don't blow it.
2 weeks later, Ritz Hotel, Montreal, Canada.
Good afternoon, Prime Minister's office.
Put me through to the Prime Minister, please.
Oh, Mr. Ambassador. I'm sorry no one's gotten back to you, sir. There was some confusion when you called.
I've been calling all week.
Yes, well, we've had some temporary staff in lately, and things have been a bit difficult.
To your father. Best Minister of Health, Alberta.
Department of Security Liaison External Affairs, Ottawa.
I think he was happier as a simple country doctor.
No, you're going to need this one.
Murray's boss pours him another drink.
You better sit down. Prime Minister's got a problem. He gave it to our minister. I have the solution. You have to make it work.
Okay, can we start with the problem?
The CIA wants the RCMP to detain Ambassador John Watkins for interrogation.
What on earth for?
They believe he's working for the Soviets.
How's his third secretary in Moscow? Watkins is no spy. He was Pearson's right-hand man.
Still is. And normally speaking, the PM could handle this, but with the cabinet scandals, the endless flag debate, Herbert Norman's suicide...
What's Norman got to do with any of this?
Well, the CIA can't forgive Pearson for publicly supporting Ambassador Norman in his refusal to appear before McCarthy's witch hunt.
Because Pearson won't sacrifice a Canadian to the Americans, now Watkins has to pay the price?
No. Pearson wants him safe. He just can't rescue another Canadian ambassador who...
Watkins is no traitor.
Well, in politics, perception is more important than reality.
So this is all about the upcoming elections.
The Liberals will be destroyed. Pearson's career finished.
And it's our job to make sure Watkins never gets picked up.
At the hotel.
This is absolutely unacceptable.
The Prime Minister has just left, sir, but someone in his office will call you early next week.
Next week?
I'm afraid there's nothing more I can do for you, Mr. Ambassador. Please call again next week.
Owen Murray, the RCMP officer in charge is your sister. I want you to stay away from her until this is over. If she finds out, Watkins doesn't have a chance.
Later, Murray strides through an underground garage.
Visit to Quebec. In the United States, it's been a year since the JFK assassination and the Warren Commission.
He climbs into a car beside Diane.
Look, Murray, I just want to apologize about the other day at the Rapids.
If they assign you the Watkins investigation, don't take it.
What?
2 days ago, your boss, Preston, asked us to send him every dispatch Watkins ever sent from Moscow.
Don't do this to me, Murray. You know I can't talk about intelligence operations.
They want to destroy Watkins because of some CIA hunch.
I have to do my job quickly and efficiently.
No one even knows what Watkins is being accused of. Do they?
Dad's death is screwing up your perceptions. How could Dad do this to me?
It wasn't suicide, and this is not about Dad.
Right now, I have to find out what the ambassador has or hasn't done, then charge him or release him. It's that simple.
They want you to think it's simple. You can't win, Diane. If Watkins is found innocent, everyone associated with the arrest will be purged. And if something happens to the old guy under interrogation, they'll need a scapegoat.
I can take care of myself.
Yeah, great.
Murray gets out. He watches Diane drive away. At a gallery, John admires a photograph.
Did this collector really know art, or did you just see a good deal at $5 a crack?
Oh, my God. Murray Fletcher.
Yes, sir.
Still enjoying your work over at External Spook Section? All those dirty little secrets, eh? I hear they're grooming you for first secretary. Which embassy? Rome? Paris?
Murray gazes at the floor uncomfortably.
Hmm? Oh, I take it our meeting was not by chance.
I'm here to give you an unofficial message.
Oh, then it must be bad news.
Not entirely.
You have a very powerful friend who's made arrangements.
What does he want me to do?
Return to France immediately. Go to your usual hotel on the left bank, and you will continue to receive full pay. Do not allow yourself to speak to anyone in the department. Do not allow yourself to speak to any official from any government agency from any country, including our own. When things have died down, your retirement will be quietly announced and a full pension put into effect.
John grabs his shoulder.
Can I trust you, Murray?
You know you can, sir. Air France 142 leaves for Paris in 3 hours.
He hands John a ticket.
I'll accompany you to the airport.
At the hotel, Murray follows John into the busy lobby. John approaches the front desk.
Excuse me, could you prepare my bill, please?
Yes, sir.
He heads for the elevator.
Thank you.
Excuse me?
He steps into his room and clutches his chest.
Oh.
Sweat beads on his face as he grimaces in pain. He grabs a vial of pills. He places one under his tongue. Downstairs, the desk clerk dials the phone. Drenched with sweat, John packs his bag. At the desk.
Yes. Inspector Diane Fletcher, please.
John writes on the inside of a cigarette pack. He puts the cigarettes in his coat pocket. He hurries back to the lobby. He notices Murray talking to another man. A bellboy watches him. He notices a suspicious guest watching him. John sneaks into a back hallway. With his hat pulled low, he slips past Murray, then steps outside. He hails a taxi. But a man in a parked car moves to intercept. As John climbs into the taxi, the other driver gets stuck in traffic.
Airport, please.
On the road, in the rain, an accident blocks the taxi. A policeman directs them to a detour.
Other way.
Sheets of rain pour down onto the accident.
You keep that traffic coming here.
A red car follows the taxi.
Look here. This isn't the way. This isn't the way.
The taxi is surrounded under a highway overpass. Several people advance on the taxi. Peering in the window, a man opens John's door.
What is this?
Mr. Ambassador, I'm Inspector Diane Fletcher, RCMP. For security reasons, I must ask you to come with me.
No, it's essential. I'm in Paris tomorrow. I have an important meeting.
Everything is taken care of, sir. You'll soon be on your way again.
John steps out of the car. He slips in the mud. Diane helps him to his feet. He's escorted to another car. Diane notices John's cigarette pack on the ground. She picks it up. She climbs into the car. At a hotel, a beefy man, Fitzpatrick, leads John and Diane out of the elevator. They step into a lavish suite, St. John's Hotel, Montreal.
Fitz, empty his pockets.
Fitzpatrick pats John down.
I would love to get out of these wet clothes.
He takes the pills.
No, not those. No, no, please. I need those in case of an emergency.
Be quiet. Regulations. Fitz, just take me to the bathroom.
As Fitzpatrick escorts him to the bathroom, Diane searches his bag. In the bathroom, John shakes off his coat. He opens the window and looks down to the street. Fitzpatrick closes it.
12 stories up, the balcony doesn't go anywhere. Anyway, we control the whole floor.
David walks into the suite.
Like Icarus, your ambition will burn your ass, Diane.
We've been waiting for you to start the interview.
We all agreed to wait for the CIA evidence.
Things have changed.
We were supposed to tail Watkins, not pick him up.
Everything happened very quickly. We couldn't find you. Hayden ordered the arrest.
Why?
Watkins was making a run for it.
You want my job, don't you, Fletcher? But you don't know the rules. Let alone know the game we're playing. Because if you did, the last thing you would want is my job.
Outside, a car bearing an American flag pulls up to the hotel. Madison steps inside. In the suite.
Better make yourself comfortable, Mr. Watkins, and we'll get on with the formalities.
How can I be comfortable? This is humiliating. It's ludicrous! Get me to a phone. I demand to speak to my minister.
Where were you running to?
I wasn't running.
One-way ticket to Paris?
Give me a phone, please!
The sooner you cooperate, the quicker you'll be on your way. Now sit down!
With a blanket draped over his shoulders, John sits in front of a microphone at a table with Diane and Fitzpatrick.
Now, first name, last name, date of birth.
They stare at him.
John Watkins, Canadian ambassador to the Soviet Union.
In a room across the courtyard,
I have to protest this arrest of Watkins. We haven't developed the evidence yet.
That's what I'm here for, David. Give you the big picture.
You know Robert Madison? Up from Langley to lend a hand.
David glares at Hayden.
Before you allegedly studied Russian, I understand you were already fluent in Danish. Where did you learn that language?
As a boy growing up in Ontario.
How old were you?
9, 10.
Who taught you?
Nobody taught me.
Oh, so you're a fatherless 9-year-old boy growing up in rural southern Ontario and you teach yourself Danish. From a book, perhaps?
It was in the summer. I worked with a Danish farmhand. He had 2 sons. They didn't speak much English. I picked up Danish by being around them.
Mm-hmm. Your father was dead. What did your mother do?
She ran a coal yard.
But she had a farm to rent out?
Yes, in the summer, where I worked, helping out.
With the Danish farmhand and his 2 sons?
That's right. Well, this is tiresome.
But you haven't done too badly for a poor farm boy from Norval, Ontario. Huh? Here you are 50 years later, rubbing shoulders with prime ministers and world leaders.
If I was really one of the old boys network, do you think I'd be sitting here now listening to your inane questions?
You sound bitter, Mr. Watkins. If that's your real name.
Does the Prime Minister know that I'm here?
This Danish farm worker, the one you learned Danish from by just being around him and his two sons, what was his name?
Luke, I don't remember his last name.
Let me help you. Luke Vandenbrink.
Yes, that's right.
You sure now?
Yes, Luke Vandenbrink.
But Luke Vandenbrink was Dutch, not Danish.
How'd you know that?
Are you still going to insist you learned Danish from a Dutch farmhand who couldn't speak English?
Why don't you ask him, for God's sake?
Luke Vandenbrink died in a boating accident when you were 14. But you knew that, didn't you?
It's a long time ago.
Why such a clumsy lie about Luke Vandenbrink? Or perhaps your Soviet intelligence handlers forgot to brief you on that part of your story.
My handlers? What?
Diane serves John a scotch.
Your favorite, I understand.
Thank you.
You see, we don't think you are who you have pretended to be all these years. We are convinced you are what we call a longtime sleeper. Another Gordon Lonsdale. Supposedly a Canadian, but really a Soviet. Slipped into our society as a teenager with a phony background. How else could you make contacts in the Soviet Politburo that no American diplomat can?
You're just the brawn in all this, aren't you? When do the brains arrive, Inspector?
Across the courtyard.
Why didn't you know about this, David?
Aiden slaps down some black and white photos.
Where were these taken?
That's his lover, and his lover is KGB.
Who provided the photos?
French intelligence. Working on the man's identity as we speak.
You spent 2 weeks last year interviewing Watkins in Paris, and you didn't know anything about this? What were you guys doing, jerking each other off?
In the suite.
How old were you when you first came to this country?
I think I'll wait for your keepers to show up. And now I'd like to rest.
Of course. We have all the time in the world. Fitz, would you show the ambassador the bedroom?
But I demand that you inform the Prime Minister.
He already knows.
Mike Pearson's sense of justice would never allow this kind of a witch hunt. He stands by his people.
Did he stand up for Herbert Norman?
He tried.
Mm-hmm. And did such a good job that Norman jumped from a fifth-story balcony in Cairo.
Herb Norman was my friend. I don't think he was the kind of man to take the easy way out.
Let's be very clear, Mr. Ambassador. I'll do whatever it takes to find out how and why you betrayed my country.
Here's to your dirty work, Inspector Fletcher.
He walks away, across the courtyard.
We won't be able to keep the Prime Minister's office out of this for much longer.
It's Friday. At least we have the weekend.
David and Madison step into the hall.
You understand what we need you to do?
I can't guarantee anything.
You'll be fine.
Madison lights David's cigarette.
You got far too much to lose.
The next day, in the interrogation suite, Madison plays the piano as Diane approaches.
This is Robert Madison, CIA. I have first crack at the old man today.
She stares at David.
I wasn't informed.
That's the way it is. If you have a problem, you talk to TGI Hayden.
Fitzpatrick escorts John into the room.
Ambassador Watkins, we meet again. This is my colleague, Mr. Madison. Unfortunately, Ambassador...
I would like to be released, sir.
We can detain you here for as long as we wish.
Our last discussions in Paris
Places I took you for a good meal, excellent wine, that last meeting when you thanked me so graciously for my time.
We can also recommend that you be stripped of your post and that your retirement pension be denied, and you will cease to exist.
Why did you bring me to this place, against my will?
To help you clear your name.
If I need your help to clear my name, I'm in serious trouble.
Ambassador, you have been named an agent of influence.
An agent of influence? What in God's name is that?
As Canadian ambassador in Moscow, you discharged your duties in a way that shaped the foreign policies of Canada and the West to the benefit of the Soviet Union rather than serving the best interest of Canada and our allies.
Where is your evidence?
We will go into that in great detail.
And my motive?
That you were the victim of a KGB entrapment that made you vulnerable to blackmail.
Well, you don't have an ounce of proof.
First of many pieces of evidence.
David lays out the photographs.
Where were those taken?
That's a photo of an acquaintance. It doesn't mean a thing.
Why didn't you reveal to me that you had a sexual relationship with this man? An individual that has been identified by two Soviet defectors as a KGB agent. Who is this man?
What?
This is the package you tried to throw away when we first detained you. We have traced the phone number to a Paris apartment.
She holds up the cigarette pack.
Who will we find there?
I have no idea.
Your KGB friend, Grigory Aloysia, threatened to expose your homosexual relationship with this man. That's why you became an agent of influence.
No!
What do you choose, Ambassador, your lover or your country?
You filthy. I have been a loyal Canadian my whole damn life.
Fitzpatrick, take the Ambassador to his room, please.
Fitzpatrick leads him away. John thinks back to the day when the photos were taken.
We can't see your ministry colleagues like this, reeking of vodka.
You're absolutely right, my friend. Honor.
John's handsome young colleague buys perfume from a market vendor.
You see, this is what I always do when I'm going back to the office after the drink is gone.
He dabs perfume on his forehead. He splashes John with perfume, and John shoves him playfully.
Now they will never suspect a thing.
Yeah, no. Only that we just got from the bloody whorehouse.
It's just perfume, John.
At the hotel.
What are the rules of your game, David?
I thought we made a good team.
First you try and block that interrogation. Then it turns out you've already interviewed Watkins months ago in Paris. Exactly whose side he won.
You've been briefed on a need to know. Just make sure you keep following my lead.
As David leaves, Madison watches.
The CIA has arrived ahead of schedule. Hope you brought the evidence we need.
It was a good job softening up the ambassador. It's just the way I would do it.
At External Affairs.
I spent all night at the airport. I checked the passenger list of every international and domestic flight out of Montreal. Nothing.
They've got him.
Murray meets with his boss, Adair.
And the PM?
That door is now closed. I've been informed the Prime Minister's office is not ready to intervene at this point.
Murray storms out. American Consulate, Montreal. Madison runs up the wooden stairs inside the old building. In an office, he grabs a phone.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert, having fun in Montreal?
Yeah, it's not Paris. What do you got for me?
Okay, listen, we found the apartment. It's on Rue Lily. The target is identified as Kamal Stoikov.
That's our guy.
Bit of a problem, though. The French SDEC boys are busting my balls. They refuse to pull him out. Say they first need to establish he's not a French citizen.
Oh, look. Tell Capitaine Nadeau that the target is a Soviet national who's illegally in France and that I'll buy him a brandy next time I'm in Paris.
Yeah, he'll like that.
And one more thing. Get Gerard to do the interrogation, okay? I trained that guy. He's the most creative psychopath they've got.
You got it.
Okay, thanks.
He hangs up. In the interrogation suite, John plays the piano. Diane walks in and places a note on the music stand that reads, Kamal.
Mean anything to you?
John thinks back to an apartment in Paris where his friend Kamal drinks wine and reads by a bright window. John sits across the room at a piano.
How on earth did you get a visa to get to Paris?
They wanted me to spy on you.
Good God, who?
Who else? Never happened, John. I am an Uzbek and a poet. So when they come to ask me about this and that, I'm going to tell them to go and screw themselves. Besides, what could I possibly tell them? Except that you have a weakness for good wine, poetry, and horribly cheap perfume.
He sits beside John at the piano. Joins in. In the interrogation suite, John plays for Diane and Madison.
From Tchaikovsky to Ray Charles, I am impressed, Ambassador.
This information you've been collecting, Inspector Fletcher, it's merely a stepping stone for yourself, isn't it? And you're a careerist, aren't you? You'd sacrifice any principle, any person, just to get ahead. Murray told me about the kayak trip. How your father died.
Murray? Spoke with you?
Yes, a few hours before you arrested me. Is it anger with your father that's behind all this?
Mention my father again and I'll make sure you never get out of here.
We should die proudly when it's no longer possible to live proudly. I think your father must have believed that.
Soon after, in the bathroom, Diane examines her sad face in the mirror. She splashes water on her face. She remembers her father kayaking in the rapids. He struggles in the heavy current. In the bathroom, Diane gazes into the mirror in despair. At External Affairs, Adair lights one cigarette off of another.
There's nothing to be done.
What have you tried?
Everything possible. It's a mess spinning out of control. Walk away.
No.
I won't be able to help you, Murray.
Just tell me what you know.
Later, Murray sits drinking at a bar. A man sits beside him and orders another round.
5 minutes and I'm gone.
Give me everything you got on what's happening to Watkins.
Don't say his name.
Come on, Steve. I'm desperate and you owe me.
I don't know anything. Rumor has it it's just another round on the fag purge orchestrated by the RCMP's very own David Present.
I don't think so. My boss told me the ambassador's being interrogated by some shadowy CIA character they brought in from the Congo. Maybe you heard of him.
Kinshasa was crawling with CIA spooks.
Robert Madison.
Steve shakes his head.
It's over. Watkins is screwed.
You know the guy.
The guy was practically a celebrity down there. In Kinshasa, he was supposed to be some kind of military attaché to the U.S. Commission. Of course, the bastard was CIA, special ops, torture, assassination, heavy stuff like that.
What can we do for Watkins?
Pray.
Steve gets up.
Contact Charles Blackburn.
Put the pen away. It's before your time. It's one of Pearson's guys who helped build External from the ground up.
What happened to him? He was purged for being queer. Blackburn might still be angry enough to help out if he knew what was going on.
Thanks, Steve.
Have fun.
Soon after.
Hello, operator. Please have Diane Fletcher call her brother. Urgent family business. Yes. Yeah, thank you.
In the suite.
And that's all there is to tell about my so-called relationship with Kamal.
Interview with Ambassador John Watkins suspended at 11:30 a.m. Sunday, October 11th, 1964.
David leaves. Fitzpatrick steps aside.
Staying, Inspector?
Diane turns to Madison.
I'll only take a moment with the ambassador.
He leaves.
Off the record, Ambassador.
Off the record. In a clandestine interrogation, off the record. That's one of the funniest things you've said all day, Inspector.
Tape recorder's off, sir.
As I have been trying to explain all morning, Kamal and I were literary friends. We were not lovers. I simply admired his poetry.
Why did you hide your dealings with Colonel Aloysia?
What are you talking about? Hayden and Present, both, knew about and encouraged my contacts with Aloysia for some considerable time now. Now, why is it that you weren't filled in on that one, Inspector?
And when was the last time you saw Colonel Aloysia?
Last time I saw Aloysia was on the way back to Moscow from a weekend in the country. We were forced to stop by a gypsy convoy.
In the car.
There is a story I've always wanted to tell you, my dear Ambassador. You know that nature demands a constant balance between predator and prey. And the only difference I have noticed occurs in your Canadian prairie. For some mysterious reason, every 7 or 8 years, Canadian hare suddenly starts screwing like crazy. Their population explodes, and soon, like some biblical punishment, the entire countryside becomes a sea of bouncing, hopping balls of fur. But their state of bliss is short-lived. Lynx, weasels, owls, and foxes descend on the defenseless hares. It becomes a bloody feeding frenzy. The hare population soon plummets to maybe a dozen animals.
In the suite.
With the food source suddenly gone,
the predators starved to death within a few months. And for a number of years, both populations all but disappear until one day, inexplicably, the hare community explodes and the bloody cycle begins again. I asked him who told him that story. He said
a Canadian. The first foreign agent I ever turned.
Do you believe his claim to have turned a Canadian spy?
Who knows?
And which animal are you, Mr. Ambassador? The fox or the hare?
I refuse to be a part of that madness.
Well, then neither side will protect you, sir.
That's the point. See, if I'm guilty of anything, Inspector Fletcher, it is of being alone as one of the few female officers in a paramilitary police force. You ought to know how that feels.
David returns with Madison behind him.
Look, gentlemen, I believe this has gone just about far enough. You know I'm not guilty. So I ask you to do the right thing, and that's to release me now.
We will, Mr. Ambassador.
Excellent.
If you can explain to me why the hell we should release such a dangerous enemy of American democracy.
What?
He turns on the tape recorder.
Over the last 10 years, in Moscow and all across Europe, you've articulated a steady stream of anti-American positions.
But I'm not American. I'm a Canadian ambassador.
Positions on nuclear arms, on Cuba, on American two-China policy, and now the communist guerrilla war in Vietnam. CIA demands to know why you've become such an implacable enemy of the United States of America.
CIA demands to know. I mean, seeing the world through other than American eyes means that I'm a Soviet agent?
Who do you and your friend Pearson imagine is going to protect this country when a million red Chinese troops come pouring down into British Columbia?
Oh, please, Mr. Madison, please.
It will be us, the Americans.
Yeah, the day the Chinese army invades British Columbia, I'll eat my hat.
This is 1964. Freedom is under attack in Africa, in Latin America, in Asia. It takes 18 minutes for a Soviet nuclear warhead to reach West Berlin and incinerate 500,000 people. In this war, there is no time for academic discussions.
You mean there's no time for intelligent thought? In Canada, there are hundreds of young Americans who refuse to fight in Vietnam.
That is treason, Mr. Watkins. And like you, those draft dodgers ought to be lined up and shot.
My loyalty is to Lester Pearson and to this country.
Which country?
Canada! Where the hell else do you think? Pearson has sworn never to let the disease called McCarthyism, of which you are the very worst example, infect this country. And that's why I know he cannot be aware of this interrogation.
He is aware, Mr. Watkins. He just doesn't give a shit. Why would your PM stick out his neck for some dying old fag whose purpose has been served?
Give me my pills. Give me my pills.
Fitzpatrick frantically digs through his pockets. Madison snatches the pills.
Bastard.
Diane takes them. She gives one to John.
Finally, a Canadian with huevos. How refreshing.
John pats Diane's hand. Elsewhere,
thank you.
A scotch is poured for a heavy, elderly man. Murray approaches him in a formal lounge.
Mr. Blackburn?
Yes?
I don't mean to alarm you, but this is a matter of some urgency.
Who are you?
My name is Murray Fletcher. I work for External Affairs.
And?
I know you are a close friend of Ambassador John Watkins. The ambassador's in dire straits. The Prime Minister must be contacted if you could see your way to help me out.
Please, leave me alone.
Blackburn leaves, but Murray follows. In the hotel, Diane works in an office adjoining the suite. Madison walks in.
You know, we're always looking for experienced female recruits down at Langley.
How do you think the interrogation's going?
Well, what's your analysis, Inspector Fletcher?
Very soon I'll need to see the evidence that Watkins was blackmailed.
Well, a KGB defector's testimony is on its way. Should be here by tomorrow.
Excellent.
I'm convinced you'd do well in the company.
I'm flattered.
It's amazing the way you make Watkins believe you're going to help him, and then...
He leans close to her.
The ability to act without remorse is a rare gift. Makes our job so much easier. Diane.
She jumps to her feet.
Is that what you tell all the girls? We really want you in the CIA, but you have to screw me first.
She leaves. Meanwhile...
You're the ambassador's last hope. Are you too tired, too scared to try and save an old friend?
Blackburn turns to Murray.
You stupid idiot. I've got every goddamn right to be scared.
Why?
He gets into his car.
Why?
They probably want to kill him.
Blackburn drives away. Meanwhile, John writes in his bedroom off the suite. Diane walks in.
You know, it's funny. But for the first time, I'm afraid.
Ambassador, you know that I must continue to interrogate you.
He seals an envelope.
You see that the Prime Minister gets this as soon as possible.
Well.
I believe your father died fighting.
No. He used me to commit suicide.
No, I think he chose to die battling the river.
Why take me?
He wanted the child he loved most by his side.
How touching.
She steps out. In the hall, she leans against the door. She remembers being on the river with her father.
It means so much to me that you could be here today.
They bob side by side in their kayaks.
You remember the first time I brought you down here?
Yeah, I could barely see over the cockpit.
You battled all day. Never complained.
No. Come on, let's get some rest.
After the rapids.
He paddles on ahead of her. She hurries after him. In the suite, John plays the piano.
Has the Prime Minister read my letter?
Delivered to Sussex Drive an hour ago. Shall we continue? An ambassador must report all meetings with Soviet citizens, especially ones he suspects of ulterior motives. These are the rules. In the case of Kamal, why didn't you follow them? Sir, you had a sexual relationship with a KGB man and did not report it.
Did Pearson know about Kamal?
I refuse to answer questions from a foreign intelligence agency.
All right, then. When did the blackmail begin, Mr. Ambassador?
This is your proof? Some miserable photo taken 2 years ago in some bazaar?
Without the help of the CIA, sir? We would never have found out that you were a KGB collaborator.
Understand this, David. While you were focusing on destroying the lives
of every homosexual in public service. I was initiating contacts with the Soviet Union that led to the sale of millions of tons of Canadian grain. The Kremlin paid handsomely and in gold.
I'd rather starve than accept Soviet gold.
That money went directly into the pockets of thousands of farm families who in turn invested in this country. This ended a recession.
It's sad nobody will remember that when they discover your collaboration with the KGB.
These trade deals softened the gridlock of the Cold War, led to detente between East and West, and finally a nuclear treaty with the Soviets. I feel profoundly privileged to have been a diplomat and served my country in these difficult times. And now you tell me what in your mean little professional life remotely justifies you in calling my work a collaboration with the KGB.
In a phone booth.
Hello, operator. Yes. I've made several calls to Diane Fletcher. Yes, this is her brother. I just want to make sure the message is getting through. Thank you.
Murray hangs up. David steps into the suite with Madison.
From the Prime Minister's office.
John takes a letter from him. They all watch him read it.
So? Well, it appears that I am no longer an ambassador. Congratulations, David. You have more power than I thought.
You still believe the Prime Minister doesn't know about this interrogation?
Diane studies the envelope.
Is this why you became an intelligence officer? To act as a mindless thug for the CIA?
David and Madison leave. Diane steps aside with the letter.
Dear Mr. Watkins, this is to inform you that as of today, you have been relieved of your responsibilities as Canadian ambassador to the Soviet Union. We thank you for the years of service and wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. Sincerely, William T. Ives.
The machine has been proven effective in the past.
Diane joins David and Madison in the office off the suite.
I need to see some hard evidence that Watkins is an agent of influence.
Well, the Kamal interview in Paris is going well, and our defectors...
Oh, yes. The mysterious KGB defectors. Do I get to interview these men?
Afraid not. Only select CIA...
Oh, so we destroy the career of a Canadian ambassador based on hearsay?
You've got the ironclad word of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Your word that a Canadian ambassador is guilty of treason?
The security of your country rests in the hands of the CIA. Without the CIA, the RCMP can't exist.
Oh, spare me the jingoistic bullshit and bring me the evidence, Mr. Madison.
Madison leaves.
You two cooked up that Watkins letter together.
You have a problem with that?
What is it exactly that Madison and the CIA have on you?
Come in, please.
A large mechanical chair is wheeled into the room.
Fruit machine. I'm going to prove that Watkins is a queer.
You're going to strap him in this medieval monstrosity?
Yes, I am.
Soon after, Fitzpatrick leads John to the chair.
Getting to bed with the CIA, and this is what you get, eh, David?
It's only a variation on a polygraph, sir.
Of course.
I am going to prove, Mr. Watkins, that you are a weak homosexual who, in order to hide your adventures in Moscow, allowed yourself to be exploited and blackmailed by the KGB.
Well, it's all quite mad, David, but certainly not boring.
It's a chance to clear yourself, Mr. Watkins.
Good, even though I haven't committed a crime.
Mr. Ambassador, you don't have to do this.
Hold on, Inspector Fletcher. Don't underestimate me.
Submit to this test, sir, or...
Be of good cheer. I will gladly take the test.
Ambassador...
On one condition.
Yes.
That you take it first. Just to prove you're heterosexual, of course.
Madison hides a grin.
Fitzpatrick. Yes, sir. Get in the chair. Take the test.
But, sir, I know that I'm not a homosexual, sir.
Yes, yes, of course. Sit down.
What if the machine says that I am, sir?
It's only a test. You'll be okay.
Well, no, sir, I won't take this test. If this thing says that I am, sir, then you'll have to fire me from the force, right? Those are the rules. No homos on the force.
Well spoken, lad.
Now cut it out. You're making us look ludicrous.
Mr. Ambassador.
Soon after.
Mr. Ambassador, I'm just going to be straightforward about this.
Well, that's usually the best way.
Diane meets privately with John.
This is awkward.
Oh, come on. Come on, Inspector. Spit it out.
Are you, sir? Are you...
You want to know if I'm gay? Of course I am. But I was never, ever manipulated by the KGB.
But, sir, it's very hard for me to believe you never worried about the possibility of blackmail.
I was discreet. And anyway, DGI Hayden gave me the green light.
He was aware of your sexual liaisons.
Of course he was.
She's stunned. In the hall.
Sir, DGI Hayden.
Not now, Diane.
No, now's the time, sir. You've made me prime interrogator on the investigation, but you've kept me in the dark. Sir, this lack of information has seriously compromised my ability.
Diane.
You knew Watkins had lovers.
I never worried about that.
Until the CIA started asking questions, right? We're all so terrified of that bastard Madison that we're just going to sacrifice Watkins.
I want to tell you why I chose you for this operation.
No, sir, where is the evidence against him?
You're loyal, tough, smart, but so ambitious. I knew you wouldn't worry about lack of evidence. And I was right. You dove right in. Took the old man apart without ever asking to see any evidence against him.
They promised me the evidence...
Fletcher! Salvage what you can from the chance I gave you.
They notice Madison watching.
And, in light of the fruit machine disaster, we've decided to make Robert Madison prime interrogator for the next session. And see if a different approach will get us what we need. And Inspector Fletcher will be happy to give you her full cooperation. Any problem with that, Inspector?
Hayden leaves with Madison. Paris, France.
What do you got for me?
On the phone.
Leave me, Robert.
Kamal lies dead on his apartment floor.
Doing our very best.
Did he give up the ambassador?
Madison's on a payphone.
Well, he had nothing to give up.
In the interrogation suite, Fitzpatrick sits on watch. Madison bursts in, waking John from a nap on the couch.
My French colleagues regret to inform me that the young man named Kamal killed himself in Paris 2 hours ago.
Horrified, John sits up.
He hanged himself with a belt.
He shows John a copy of a photograph.
You, sir, are responsible for this man's death. More importantly, he fingered you as a Soviet agent turned as a result of a sex trap operation by the KGB.
This is madness.
Madison pulls a document from his pocket.
During my tenure in Moscow, I engaged in homosexual activities with the KGB agent Kamal Stoykov. Rather than publicly admit to my deviant sexuality, I allowed myself to be blackmailed. I became a Soviet agent of influence. Sign this and you're on your way.
John stares at the photo.
business matters.
Did Pearson know about Kamal?
To protect democracy, you torture people to death!
Later, on a black and white TV.
FLQ, which has promised violent struggle to liberate Quebec.
David moves a chair to face the TV.
Fitz, come take a look here.
A great deal is known about the leaders and membership.
Fitzpatrick gets up and walks into the adjoining room.
You know some of these rabble rousers, don't you?
But stresses that it wants to create this new state, peaceful and constitutional.
He sits in the chair. Meanwhile, Madison takes off his watch as he sneaks into John's bedroom. He leans close to John, who lies sleeping in bed.
So you want a piece of me, huh?
John opens his eyes. Madison drags him from the room, hand at his throat. He marches him behind David and Fitzpatrick. Diane steps into the TV room.
Damn, it looks like it's going to start raining again.
She turns to the TV.
FLQ.
On the balcony.
Now I would urge you to sign that confession, Ambassador.
He holds John over the railing.
I've nothing to give.
He spins John to face the street far below.
I've nothing to give.
Do you think I'm just here for you? Do you? Sign it! You go back to France!
In the TV room.
The FLQ threat's very serious.
Where's Madison?
The Queen's visit to Quebec.
Diane and Fitzpatrick run into the main room.
Mr. Ambassador!
She sees them on the balcony.
Get away from him!
Madison releases him.
Everybody calm down. John and I were just getting some air together.
Fitz, take the ambassador to the bedroom and stay with him.
It's Pearson I want.
David watches sourly as Fitzpatrick leads John away. Diane turns to the rain-soaked balcony.
Is that why you became an intelligence officer?
The memory of her father's death rushes back to her. She remembers him tipping into the rapids. On the balcony, she holds back tears.
We should die proudly when it's no longer possible to live proudly.
She marches back inside. She finds Hayden.
The CIA has nothing. Watkins is probably only guilty of having sex with a man. Sir, if they had any proof Watkins was an agent of influence, Madison wouldn't be trying to throw him off a 12-story balcony.
If we don't let this thing with Watkins play through, Angleton has threatened to cut us out of the CIA intelligence loop, which makes us blind outside of Canada.
We're already flying blind.
You don't think I want to get the old guy out? I do, but neither one of us has a choice. Get this through your head. Lyndon Johnson speaks to the director of the CIA. The director talks to Angleton. Angleton tells me. Christ, do you get it now, Diane?
He leaves.
Watkins told me you tipped him off.
Tried to tell you he was innocent.
Diane meets with Murray in a parked car.
Diane, I'm sorry.
You did the right thing. But I wonder who leaked it to your boss. Only two other people knew we were about to pick up Watkins, Hayden and Present. And I'm sure it wasn't DGI Hayden.
So it had to be Present. Take a look at this.
He opens a folder.
Who's this?
Patrice Lumumba, the first democratically elected president of the Congo. Madison was the last American to see him alive. Check the U.S. Embassy directory. Madison was listed as military attaché in Egypt the same month Herbert Norman jumped to his death.
Now it's our turn.
2 months after Madison arrived in Brazil, conservative President Quadros was smeared as a communist overthrown and replaced by an executive of the United Fruit Company. Everywhere Madison shows up, leaders wishing to be independent of the U.S. end up overthrown or dead. Now listen to this. There are whispers that only last month, Angleton tried to convince MI5 to arrest British Labour Prime Minister Wilson on the suspicion that he was a Soviet agent. They failed in Britain, and now they want a shot here.
Ambassador was right.
It's a classic CIA tactic. If you can't outright kill the guy, smear him so bad he's drummed out of office by his own people. And to do that, what do you need?
Watkins.
Get the hell out.
I can't do that.
It doesn't matter to them if Watkins is innocent or guilty. He's going to be sacrificed to bring Pearson down. Diane, even External Affairs has given up. You're alone now.
No. My brother's sinking the boat.
If you get in the way, Madison will take you out.
Kissing Murray on the cheek, she leaves the car. John writes in his bedroom.
Come in.
Mr. Ambassador?
Yeah.
Diane steps in. She picks up a piece of his writing.
I am falling into years, but such as you and I do not seem old.
Like men who live by habit.
Yeats wrote this, didn't he?
Yeah. I dreamt I was reading my own obituary.
What did it say?
Ambassador John Watkins died suddenly of a heart attack while dining with friends at a farewell dinner.
Oh, not such a bad way to go.
No. But I was angry in my dream. I knew I'd died here, alone, surrounded by my enemies. The obituary was a lie. Curious, don't you think?
She nods.
Did you really believe your relationship with Pearson would protect you?
My belief in his honor and in my own record became my blind spot. Get me out of here, Inspector.
Me until tomorrow.
He nods. The next day, Diane walks into the interrogation suite.
Where's Madison?
He's gone to his consulate. We can start without him.
Can I have a word with you?
David steps aside with her, leaving John with Fitzpatrick.
I know you tipped off External Affairs to try and get Watkins out of the country.
What do you want, Fletcher?
I want the ambassador safe.
I can't do anything.
Together, we could try to convince DGI Hayden to call this thing off.
He won't act.
It's the CIA, David. Angleton is behind all this. We're intimidated. Fighting so much amongst ourselves, we can't protect our ambassadors, not even our own prime minister.
It's too late.
Why?
Look, the best thing you and I can do right now is try and be amongst the last ones standing. We're trapped. It's a bloody cycle, Diane. Let me tell you something. You are way over your head. Do you know the story of the Canadian prairie hare?
John turns to David.
It's fascinating, really. Every 7 or 8 years, Canadian hare starts screwing like crazy. Pretty soon their population explodes, but then, like some biblical punishment.
But their bliss is short-lived. Lynx, weasels, owls, foxes descend on the defenseless hares. You're a natural-born storyteller, Dave.
You're the mole, you bastard!
As Fitzpatrick grabs David by the throat, John grins. Diane, David, and Fitzpatrick step into the office.
We need to talk.
Diane sets a folding chair in the center of the room. David sits.
Fitz, will you give us a minute, please?
He leaves.
You did everything to avoid arresting Watkins. You feared if he were really a spy, he'd expose you too. You must have panicked when I arrested him. But after that first interrogation, you realized that Watkins was innocent. To save yourself, you destroyed the ambassador. How ironic that in the end, you betrayed yourself.
Do you still want my job, Diane?
You're about to enter hell, David.
How so?
That's where Angleton will send you when I tell him you're the KGB mole we've all been looking for.
Angleton won't do a thing.
The CIA already knows.
David smirks.
And they never bothered to tell us. Oh, I pity you. The life of a triple agent. Lying to everybody? Desperate to look busy when any move you make could get you killed? No more deals, David. You'll do exactly what I tell you. Because if word gets out through Fitzpatrick to the rank and file that you were KGB, you won't last 24 hours.
The smirk fades from his face. Later, John sits on the balcony wearing a suit, basking in the sun. Diane approaches.
Now you look like an ambassador again. Living the good life.
It's not over yet, is it?
Oh, it won't be long. Presence on side. I'm on my way to see Hayden and negotiate your release. But I can't leave you alone.
Well, Fitz is just around the corner.
Inside, Fitzpatrick guards David.
I can survive 1 hour more in a hotel room. Get something for yourself.
Getting you on that plane will be enough.
And then?
I'm staying. We'll have to work harder to drive me out.
He takes her hand.
Your father would be proud as hell.
Thank you.
Get going.
She holds his shoulder and leaves. John closes his eyes. He thinks back to the apartment in Paris and the glass of wine on the piano. An empty glass is set beside his own. Kamal refills it. On the balcony, John opens his eyes. Madison sits beside him.
I'm curious, why do you enjoy inflicting pain?
Some people are short, some are tall, some are fat, and some are thin. It's just my nature. I think you could learn a thing or two from me, Ambassador.
Oh, yes? About 20th century ugly American diplomacy?
16th century Machiavellian Italy. Pearson understands that to rule effectively, a man must learn to be bad.
Well, I'm the living proof.
Yes. You can continue to protect Pearson.
Fitzpatrick glances at the balcony. He stands.
Well, you can tell me about his collaboration with the Soviets.
Are you all right, Mr. Ambassador?
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you, Fitz. I'm just having a last chat with my American friend.
Fitzpatrick goes back inside. In the hotel bar, Diane approaches Hayden.
Another harangue, Diane?
I'm bringing the ambassador out.
Not today.
I'm afraid so. With or without you?
Well, as much as I've enjoyed your company, Mr. Madison, and our fascinating geopolitical discussion, I'm leaving.
John clutches his chest.
You don't understand, Ambassador.
As Madison pulls out the document, John grabs his left arm, sweating profusely. John sits and reaches for his pills. Madison grabs them.
You signed this document. I have the power to keep you here forever. And we both know how long that can be.
He sets down a pen as John gasps for air.
Touch of angina, Ambassador?
I never signed a document that accuses the Prime Minister of treason. It would be such a terrible lie. A betrayal to my country.
You sign it.
No. I bloody well choose the terms by which I live or die.
Herb Norman said the same thing.
Fitzpatrick hurries to the balcony. John lies on the floor, with Madison crouching beside him.
Mr. Watkins!
The ambassador requires medical attention. Go get Inspector Fletcher.
Fitzpatrick runs back inside. In the bar.
You have to confront Angleton now, sir, before Watkins dies under the stress or Pearson is brought down. Are you that terrified of Angleton?
On the balcony, Madison opens the vial of pills. David turns to the phone.
I'm taking Watkins out right away.
Fitzpatrick runs in.
Things are out of control.
They follow him back upstairs. On the balcony, Madison touches a pill to his tongue. John lies motionless on the floor. Fitzpatrick, Diane, and Hayden stand impatiently in the elevator. Madison eats a pill. In the suite, David continues to ignore the phone. In the elevator, Diane checks the gun in her hand. Dying on the balcony, John thinks back to the Paris apartment and Kamal pouring the wine. He spills the red wine onto a white tablecloth. Diane and the others arrive.
Ambassador?
She checks for John's pulse.
It's too bad. I was just starting to get to like the old guy.
Diane turns her gun on Madison.
Don't give me an excuse to kill you.
He calmly steps toward her. She lowers the gun. Madison drags on his cigarette.
Look at it this way, Diane. You and I, we put the poor old bastard out of his misery.
She backhands him to the floor. Inside, David answers the phone.
David Present here. The ambassador has just left, Mr. Prime Minister.
Yes, sir. To go out for some drinks and later dinner with some friends. Yes, sir. As soon as he gets back. Thank you, sir. You too.
He hangs up. Later, John's body is wheeled out of the room as a coroner's assistant fills out some paperwork.
Inspector, could you witness the death certificate, please?
Dressed in a formal RCMP uniform, Diane takes the death certificate.
Just give me a minute.
She carries it to Madison, who lies casually on the couch.
Sign this.
He signs it.
And by the way, Present comes with me. CIA asset.
I'll send him to you when I'm done.
In the adjoining office, David sits with Fitzpatrick. Diane walks in.
Mr. Present? On the order of DGI Hayden, I am commanded to detain you in this place and inform you that you have been suspended from all duties and responsibilities until this inquiry is satisfied.
On what charges?
You've been identified, sir, as a collaborator with Soviet intelligence organizations.
I will cooperate fully in the investigation, but I wish to state that I am innocent and will prove it beyond any doubt.
October 12th, 1964. Inspector Diane Fletcher interviews David Present. Acting Sergeant Sean Fitzpatrick attends. Time is 7:45 p.m. Now, sir, please tell me in a clear voice your name, rank, date of birth.
The obituary reads, John Watkins, Canadian diplomat to the USSR, died of a heart attack in a Montreal restaurant in the presence of friends during a farewell dinner. Ambassador John Watkins' death remained a closely guarded secret for 18 years until writer Ian Adams unearthed the story. Executive producers Randy Bradshaw, Arnie Gelbart, Doug McLeod. This described version of Agent of Influence was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by J.J. Hunt, narrated by Walter Soles, and produced by Valerie Hunter and Marco Sorin. For information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: John Watkins, Christopher Plummer, Diane Fletcher, Marina Orsini, Robert Madison, Ted Whittall, David Present, Sean Johnston, Sean Fitzpatrick, Curtis Sanheim, Murray Fletcher, Alain Goulem, Chris Hayden, Terry Lawrence, Gregory Aloysia, Gregory Halani, Charles Adair, Paul Kaur, Kamal Rashid, Kaz Anvar. Directed by Michelle Poulette. Written by Ian Adams and John Riley Adams. Based on the novel Agent of Influence by Ian Adams. Produced with the participation of the Canadian Television Fund. Produced in association with CTV Television, Inc. Produced with the support of the CFRN CTV Fund, Edmonton, Alberta. Produced with the participation of the Cogeco Program Development Fund. Produced with the financial participation of the CFCN Production Fund in association with CTV Television, Inc. Produced with the assistance of the Alberta Film Development Program of the Alberta Foundation for the Arts. Produced with the participation of the Quebec Film and Television Tax Credit. Produced with the participation of the Canadian Film or Video Production Tax Credit. Copyright 2002 Agent Productions, Inc. and Gala Film Productions 2000, Inc. Alberta Filmworks. Gala Film. CTV, a division of Bell Globe Media. Alliance Atlantis.